Welcome back to the deep dive, everybody. We are jumping into a really special custom tailored mission today just for you listening.
Yeah, this one is incredibly relevant for, well, pretty much all of us.
Seriously. We're looking at this highly personalized guide today, and it's called Overcoming Shyness and the Cost of Inaction. And I mean, society loves to tell us that shyness is just, you know, a cute personality quirk.
Right. Like, it's just quiet modesty.
Exactly. We brush it off. We say, oh, they're just an introvert. But okay, let's unpack this, because the guide argues something entirely different. It says shyness is actually an invisible prison cell.
Yeah. And that distinction between introversion and shyness, that is the foundational dividing line we have to establish right out of the gate here.
Because they aren't the same thing at all, right?
Not at all. I mean, introversion is really just a neurological baseline. It's about how you process stimulation and how you recharge your energy.
You need quiet time to recharge, basically.
Exactly. Shyness, on the other hand, is a behavioral barrier. Right. It's an invisible handicap that guarantees you lose before you even compete.
Wow.
Yeah, it stops being this harmless little trait the exact moment it prevents you from, you know, pitching a crucial idea at work or speaking up when someone crosses a boundary.
Or even just asking for the compensation you objectively deserve.
Precisely. That's when it becomes a self-imposed prison.
So to break out of this invisible prison cell, we first really need to understand the psychological bars keeping us inside. Like, why does it paralyze us so badly in the first place?
Well, the guide points heavily to cognitive distortions. And the big one, the one that really drives this, is called the spotlight effect.
Oh, I love this concept, the spotlight effect.
Yeah, it's this cognitive bias where you operate under the exhausting assumption that everyone around you is just hyper-analyzing your every move.
Every flaw, every mistake.
Right. Your brain scales up the perceived social scrutiny to just a completely irrational degree.
The analogy from the source that stuck with me is the mustard stain. So it's like walking into a crowded room and you realize you have this giant mustard stain on your shirt and you just completely freeze in panic.
Yes, the classic mustard stain scenario.
You assume every single person in that room is scrutinizing the stain, questioning your professionalism, judging your hygiene.
When in reality...
In reality, everyone else is entirely consumed by their own metaphorical mustard stains.
Exactly. They're trapped in their own spotlights, obsessing over their own insecurities. They aren't even looking at you.
Which is wild when you think about it, but why do our brains default to that? Why are we so hyper-focused on ourselves?
It comes down to ego and fear of judgment, driven by evolutionary psychology. Shyness is fundamentally a protective mechanism. It's a shield deployed by a fragile ego.
Because back in the day, standing out was dangerous.
Very dangerous. In our early evolutionary history, being closely scrutinized by the tribe usually meant you were being judged for some kind of transgression.
Right.
And social rejection wasn't just, you know, embarrassing. It meant exile. And exile meant starvation.
Wow. So the brain literally equates speaking up in a meeting with starving to death alone in the wilderness.
That is exactly how the nervous system interprets it. The ego decides that the quiet safety of inaction is infinitely preferable to the vulnerable risk of visibility.
Okay, but wait, isn't overthinking just a smart way of being prepared? I mean, when I sit in a meeting, silently analyzing the room, running through every scenario before I raise my hand, shouldn't we calculate the risks before we speak?
What's fascinating here is how the source material completely deconstructs that exact misconception.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it feels so productive in the moment.
I know, it really does. But overthinking is rarely genuine preparation. It's just a highly sophisticated defense mechanism.
So my brain is tricking me.
Yes, it's weaponizing your own intelligence against you to justify inaction. You aren't finding the optimal moment to speak. You're building a watertight, logical case for why you shouldn't act at all.
The text calls this perfectionism in disguise.
That's the one. You tell yourself you're waiting for the absolute perfect moment, or waiting until you feel 100% confident before you send that email.
And that's just shyness wearing a mask, isn't it?
Completely. Waiting for confidence to arrive before you take action is entirely backward. Confidence is the aftermath of action. It is never the prerequisite.
You have to do the scary thing first.
Always. Surviving the vulnerability of that action is what actually generates the confidence.
Man, that is a hard truth. And it brings us to the second major part of this deep dive, the compounding cost of inaction. Because staying in that comfortable hiding spot, it is not free.
No, it is incredibly expensive.
The text points out something brutal. Talent, intelligence, good intentions, They count for absolutely zero if they never leave your head.
The world only rewards what is executed.
Right. You could have the deepest technical knowledge in your entire department, but if you sit quietly in the corner, your expertise yields zero influence.
Which introduces this really painful concept of asymmetric regret.
Yes, asymmetric regret.
Yeah.
Human beings process errors of commission differently than errors of omission. So if you speak up and stumble or pitch a bad idea, you might cringe on the drive home.
Sure, you feel awkward for a day or two.
But then the embarrassment fades. But what haunts people for decades, what leaves this agonizing open loop in your brain, are the shots you didn't take, the times you stayed silent when you actually had the answer.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's not just internal regret. It's a profound loss of personal agency.
How so?
Well, by refusing to assert yourself, you are actively forcing other people to make decisions for you. They decide your career trajectory, your projects, even your relationships.
You're just handing over the steering wheel of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And what really drives me crazy about this is watching who takes that wheel.
Oh, absolutely.
We've all seen it. Someone who is way less capable, way less prepared, they step in and claim the promotion you were perfectly qualified for, and they succeed just because they are bolder.
They aren't paralyzed by the need for perfect execution, so they act. And the world rewards their momentum. It is the ultimate tax on hesitation.
So why do we keep paying that tax? If we know it's costing us our careers and our happiness, why do we stay paralyzed?
That brings us to the fear loop. We have to look at the amygdala, which is the brain's threat detection center.
Because the brain is miscategorizing the threat.
Right.
It's confusing a normal social interaction with a literal life or death situation.
Exactly. Introducing yourself to a senior executive sets off the exact same alarm bells as seeing a physical predator. It floods you with cortisol and adrenaline.
Just a total nervous system hijack.
And here is where the trap snaps shut. When you listen to that fear and you retreat into silence, you survive the moment. You avoid the perceived danger.
Okay, so the brain says, hey, staying quiet kept us alive.
Yes, it registers your avoidance as a successful survival strategy. So it biologically rewards you with a feeling of relief.
Oh, wow. So you are actively training your own neurobiology to be even more terrified the next time.
Every single time you retreat, you strengthen that anxiety circuit. You dig the groove of that behavioral pattern deeper into your nervous system.
That is terrifying. It's a self-reinforcing cycle of paralysis.
But neuroplasticity works in both directions. You can wire your brain for chronic avoidance, but you can also wire it for courage.
Which is exactly what we need to get into next. We've diagnosed the prison cell. We've looked at the biological loop keeping the door shut. Now, how do we actively short-circuit this fear loop in real time?
We have to interrupt those cognitive distortions before they can fully hijack your behavior.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The first tactical framework in the guide is the 5-second rule.
This is such a powerful tool.
It really is. Basically, when you feel that impulse to act, to speak up, to introduce yourself, to click send, you have a 5-second window to physically move before your rationalizing brain invents fear-based excuses.
Right, count it down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, physical action.
If you wait any longer, the brain shuts you down. What's the neuroscience behind that tiny window?
It relies on shifting the brain's energy. By forcing physical action immediately, you activate the prefrontal cortex and the motor cortex.
So you're literally outrunning your own fear response.
You're outrunning the amygdala, yes. You don't give it time to generate the excuses.
I love that. It's like manually flipping a circuit breaker in your house. Before the electrical surge of anxiety can paralyze your vocal cords, you flip the switch with sheer physical momentum. You stand up. You raise your hand.
You break the initial freeze response. But maintaining that momentum once you're actually in the conversation requires the second framework.
Right, which is externalization. Shifting your focus.
Because shyness is a hyper-self-focused state. You're trapped in this internal monologue saying, how do I look? What do they think of my voice?
My favorite analogy for this, it's like a smartphone camera stuck in selfie mode. The lens is permanently pointed at your own face, and you're just scrutinizing every awkward angle.
That's a perfect way to describe it. The actual context of the interaction is entirely blurred out.
So how do high performers fix that?
They flip it. Instead of asking, how do I look? They ask, how can I help this person? What value am I bringing to this problem right now?
You tap the screen and switch the camera from selfie mode back to the worldview. Suddenly, you aren't the subject anymore. The mission is.
Exactly. When your attention is fully on the outcome and the other person, self-consciousness naturally starves. Your brain literally doesn't have the bandwidth to worry about your ego when you're focused on solving an external problem.
That is such a mental relief, just making it not about you.
But to make that an automatic response, you have to practice. The threat response has to be retrained, which is where micro-courage and exposure therapy come in.
Because courage isn't genetic, it's a muscle you train with progressive resistance. You don't start by giving a keynote speech to 1,000 people.
No, that would just overwhelm the nervous system. You start with microdoses of courage. The guide has great examples of this.
Like holding eye contact for one extra second when you're ordering coffee, just slightly past your comfort zone.
Yes. Or making the conscious choice to be the very first person to say good morning when you walk into the office, instead of waiting for someone else to break the silence.
Oh, and my favorite one, expressing an opinion without a self-deprecating disclaimer.
That one is huge. Catching yourself before you say, this is probably a stupid idea, but...
Right, you just state the idea clearly and let it stand. And you allow that unprotected silence to just hang in the air without rushing to apologize for it.
It's going to feel physically uncomfortable. Your heart rate might spike.
But that discomfort is the friction of growth. It's the new neural pathway forming, which actually prompts the ultimate clarifying question for you listening right now. So I don't have to wait until I'm cured of my shyness to do these things.
No. And that is the core lesson of the entire guide. Courage over comfort. You do not need to eliminate the physiological feeling of shyness to act boldly.
You just accept the awkwardness.
You accept that feeling awkward is simply the feeling of personal growth. Action is what cures the fear.
So what does this all mean? For you listening, it means nobody is coming to save you. Nobody is going to walk up, tap you on the shoulder, and hand you a permission slip to finally take up space in the world.
You have to take the fear with you and execute anyway. The moment you choose bold execution over silent self-protection, your entire trajectory changes.
It really does. We learned today that retreating trains your brain to see silence as safety. But I want to leave you with this final lingering thought. What incredible, unexpected opportunities might suddenly appear in your life if you deliberately trained your brain to register awkward, bold action as your brand new default state of safety?